got my suitcase in my hand. I walk alone, a lonely man. You lied to me, but I love you still. So I'm on my way to Heartbreak Hill.
If you came down, now that knoll wasn't there.
Okay.
They put the knoll in when they paved this and fixed it up. But if you came down from those trees, just about where that car is now, there's where the CPA was, right over there.
David Peters and Ralph Thomas are turning the heads of people driving past on St. John's Chesley Drive. They see two black men in their 70s, joking, teasing, sometimes doubled over in laughter.
So we went swimming and everything.
They've known each other since they were teens. Today they're visiting the past, trying to identify a lost landmark from St. John's history, the site of the hall belonging to the Colored People's Association.
Hardwood floor, wood everything, a couple of windows on each side.
I would say the building was 40 feet?
It had to be that long.
The hall and the entire neighborhood around it were destroyed during urban renewal in the 1960s.
Oh, yeah. 30 feet wide because it took in those bathrooms and it took in that place for the
music and everything and the stage down there. You went in, you knew you were in a nice large hall.
Yeah.
Very nicely done. You could put your weddings on there, wedding receptions.
In the 1950s, St. John had a large black community with a long history, the descendants of original black loyalists who came from the United States. Most lived side by side with whites in several square blocks of the North End, a jumbled mix of crumbling wood housing chopped into apartments.
You wouldn't dare be prejudiced in the North End or you'd go broke. Okay? The North End catered mainly to the black community, and God bless the poor whites. That was it. You got prejudiced with either one, you might as well lock your doors.
Okay.
Now, that shocked me, because where I was brought up in Mecklenburg Street, and you walked uptown by King Square and all these stores, you're lucky if two or three of them opened their doors to you. And those that did, oh my God, they followed you around like you were a thief right from the minute you walked in. You were watched like a hawk. This was the type of discrimination we grew up in, but not socially mingling, no.
The CPA was a place where black people always felt welcome. It was their center for weddings, anniversaries, community meetings.
We're having a party.
On Saturday nights, there were dances featuring the recordings of black musicians, music you didn't hear on the radio in St. John.
DJ on the radio. Popcorn's on the table. Me and my baby, we're out here on the floor. So Mr. DJ, keep those records playing, 'cause I'm having such a good time dancing with my baby.
We face a hostile ideology, global in scope, atheistic in character, ruthless in purpose, and insidious in method. Unhappily, the danger it poses promises to be of indefinite duration.
It's the height of the Cold War. A nuclear holocaust seems a real possibility. And 300 kilometers away from St. John, in the northern Maine community of Limestone, the U.S. Strategic Air Command has built the Mammoth Loring Air Force Base. It is a small city with thousands of airmen, ground support, and soldiers, many of them young men, hundreds of them young black men, isolated from family and friends, surrounded by nothing but farmland and woods. This is the story of what happened when word spread among those black American servicemen that across the international border in Canada, at the end of 320 kilometers of bad road, in a city they'd never heard of, there were black people.
Everybody's swinging. Oh, we're dancing to the music. Yeah.
We knew it was some black people in St. John, so we just drew 3 carloads of gas, just took off, since it went about 200 miles away.
Eugene Samuel is now in his 70s. He's a big man with sleepy eyes and still has the slow drawl of his native Mississippi. Samuel remembers the CPA well. The music, the excitement, and sometimes a vague threat that pulsed through the room. He and his friends were coming to a mostly white city where the reception, even by blacks, was uncertain. But it wasn't enough to stop the young men, who quickly realized they'd be welcomed by at least one group, the young black women of St. John. The event was the Saturday night dances at the CPA. If you were a person who enjoyed a drink, the party started outdoors. The hall itself was dry. But the real action was inside.
One Saturday night, there was 3 or 4 of these fellas in their American uniforms, and we thought, well, this was nice. They know we're here, they're coming over from the States, and all of a sudden the girls are going gaga for these uniforms, and these were fellas from America, and they were in the services, they had employment, they were somebody, and the local fellas were, whoa, what's going on here?
Oh, we love the guys in uniform. We love the guys in uniform because we had cousins who were in the Navy, and when they would come home, oh my gosh, we just thought they were the best looking things that they were, you know. But they were so poised and clean, and you know, and they walked so nice, you know. The guys in uniforms really impressed me.
Well, the tension was the guys were the local guys, you know, saying that we was taking their girlfriends. Well, if it had been their girlfriends, we wouldn't be taking them. That's what we told them. If they're yours, then, well, there they are, go get them. So, no, they don't want to get them, they want to get us.
And the first night or two, it just made the arguments in that. And then the girls started breaking off with some of the local fellows because they wanted to be free to date others if they had to, and it just went from there. And as you said, one of the people you talked to used the word invasion, and that's what happened. They started coming in throngs after that, by the carloads on the weekend here to St. John. And oh, the hostilities were unreal. True hostilities.
Well, I might have felt the same way if they was coming to my town, taking all my girls too, you know.
St. John's young black men could only watch as many of the women they'd grown up around began to pair off with these flashy Americans.
One night, he at the dance, he offered to take me and my cousin home.
Faye Jarvis was 18. She moved here from her tiny hometown of Weymouth Falls, Nova Scotia, one of many young black women in St. John who worked as live-in domestics.
He drove a car down, so he took us home. And the next time, he took me by myself home. And we just kind of connected from there.
A bit about the cars. The Americans had really nice cars.
America's asking you to car. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land of all.
Now, they were turning up in Cadillacs. This made them look extremely wealthy. We were never heard of renting a car for the weekend. So here these fellas were, fully employed with the American services, and these were the Air Force fellas. And they did look smart in their uniforms, and they were fully employed. And hey, they had limousines, they had Cadillacs, hey, they had Impalas. This was something to see, and the girls were just floating. And how these fellas locally, we couldn't compete with this. It was just unreal.
Performance is sweeter, nothing can beat her. Life is completer in a Chevy. So make a date today to see the USA. And
It turns out those cars were more likely borrowed than rented. Eugene Samuels says the sergeants owned cars. Enlistees like him either hitched a ride or convinced a friend to lend him a vehicle. But the well-groomed American men did have jobs and money. Saturday night dances at the CPA began to rev up, with as many as 50 servicemen joining the crowd. Many families saw their daughters pairing up with the newcomers. And what started out as a welcome coming together of cultures was quickly turning into a problem for some jilted young St. Johners.
Oh, yeah. They would, the evening would go along, and then towards the end of the evening, would start to come. You could see the smoke.
You didn't stay at the end of the dance. You didn't dare stay right to the end of the
dance.
And
there could be a situation at the end of the evening. Oh,
yeah. Could be.
See, if I'm dancing, and they say, that's my girlfriend, you know, they come up and go take her, you know, say, well, you can't dance with her. Then, you know. And we had some hothead guys, and they had hothead guys, and that's how it gets started, you know. One talking about the girl. Plus, if they had, most time they be had a drink, you know.
What, you guys be drinking too?
Yeah, we be drinking too. I never drink, but most everybody else drink. You know.
Fights happened. And they were vicious. I mean, they were honestly vicious. You picture saws being used in people's legs. You picture knives being used. You picture piano stools being banged over people's heads. I mean, they were vicious.
Were there enough of them that they could hold their side?
Oh, yes. I'm telling you, you get out of the dance hall. You made tracks, because I couldn't have cared less at that time. There was nothing that important for me. And the police wouldn't even come near. Saturday night, the last place they would come is down Sherrer Street, Chesley Drive, and around there. If you lived on Monday, we'll go and investigate. But Saturday night, forget it. Back then, I might as well say it point blank, if you were black, get back, was an attitude that was floating around the city. And if the blacks wanted to fight and slash each other up and fight, fine, we'll investigate it Monday when it's safe. Simple as that.
We would have about 3 or 4 fights after that when they saw they couldn't win. We was all in shape, you know. I might have threw one punch and that's it. Now I'm going to watch them fight. So I didn't have to fight. They don't need no help. They don't need my help. Because when the police come in, they take us to jail if you fight. Wouldn't take them to jail.
The wrath of young St. Johners was just one of the difficulties facing the airmen coming to the city. Finding somewhere to stay was also a problem. Not many places would take blacks, especially strangers with new cars. The establishment of choice was a motel that rented cabins just outside the city at Spruce Lake. And once a relationship in St. John got serious, the soldiers would often risk coming alone, sometimes by bus, an 8-hour trip, all for love.
Brought me candy and flowers and, you know, and we'd go out and we used to have picnics and wiener roses and things like that, you know. But he treated me like a lady.
Faye Jarvis had decided Eugene Samuel was the one.
He was a handsome fellow.
Yes, he was. Very handsome.
They went back to her hometown of Weymouth to get married. In their wedding portrait, Eugene looks splendid in his blue Air Force uniform.
He was kind and, you know, it made a lot of difference. He wasn't loud and boisterous and drank a lot and that sort of thing, you know. We had a lot in common.
Downstairs. May not be all finished, but it'll be clean in the first 8 hours.
I don't think anyone, it'll matter.
5 decades later, the couple lives in a pleasant brick home on a corner lot in a leafy suburb of Chicago. Their 2 children, 8 grandchildren, and 9 great-grandchildren live nearby. Chicago has been good to the Samuels. They gave little thought to staying in St. John, And Eugene says that after the Air Force, there was no way he was going back to the Mississippi of 1960. Chicago was initially a hard place for a young black couple starting out, but Eugene had family in the city, and it all worked out.
Oh, I might make you some fish cakes.
There you go.
Make sure fish cakes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's going to be a Weymouth recipe.
Yes, it is.
My sister and I can't get enough of it.
Faye is an elegant and attractive woman, now retired after working her way to senior management at a Chicago hotel. I ask her if she ever wonders how she would have done had she remained in the Maritimes.
That's what I'm saying. That's surprising.
No, it was not.
Two jokes.
I try not to dwell on it because there was no work. There was nothing to do, you know. And I don't know what would have happened, but I know when I was little, I used to say to myself, if I ever get a chance, I'm going to a bigger play. And I did. And my cousin and I used to talk about it all the time. Faye, when we get after 16, we're leaving. And we all finally left. I had cousins across the street who left, you know, and a lot of other girls, they left. They're still in the United States. People living in Austin and Washington and Dallas and my sister in Oklahoma.
Traveling east, traveling west, wherever you go, Chevy service is best. Southward or north, near place or far, there's a Chevrolet dealer for your Chevrolet car.
See the USA in your Chevrolet.
It's hard to say how this out-migration of black women changed St. John. Plenty of people from other backgrounds have also left over the decades. David Peters was dating a white woman during what he refers to as the invasion of the Flyboys. He too left St. John, but eventually came back. He married a different white woman and has raised his family here. But as he says, this is a far less black city than it used to be.
Our community went from about 3,000 down to something like 900, not even 1,000. When the ladies moved and the people, even myself, I moved out for employment. I was sick and tired of the prejudice. I went to Toronto to finish my education. I went to Ryerson. I saw how well I was received, the opportunities that were there for a job. The only reason I came back home is my father died and I came home for Dad's funeral.
But there are many ways to measure things in life. The black women who left St. John helped change the communities in which they now live. And they carry something of this city and of the Maritimes with them. Faye Samuel, despite her success in Chicago, never gave up her Canadian citizenship.
I really didn't know how things were going to work out. And I said, well, if I keep my Canadian citizenship, I can always go back home and stay. Now, that's my honest, that's exactly how I felt. We've had our trials and tribulations, believe me. But if you're big enough, you can overcome it, you know? And marriage is a challenge all the time. But if you're big enough to work it out and say, well, I'm sorry sometime, you know, it works out. It's been nice, though. I don't know where the years went. You know, because my daughter is almost 50 years old, and my son in there, he's my baby, and he's 44. So, I think we did something right.
My name is Eugene Samuel Jr. I live here in Broadview, right around the block from my parents, and I am their son.
Faye's baby, Eugene Jr., or Gene, is a large, quiet man with a shaved head. There's a picture of him wearing dark sunglasses on the job as a police officer for the city of West Chicago. It turns out a lifetime of summer vacations in Canada and a deep affection for relatives there has given him a soft spot for his mother's homeland, so much so that his fellow officers call him the Canadian.
While working one day, myself and my boss, we were standing outside, and a couple of gentlemen came out, and they were talking to us. And when they started talking, I could tell that they were from Canada because of the accent. And then I asked them where they were from, and they said Nova Scotia, and they were from Halifax. So we started talking, and started talking about the area and Halifax and Weymouth, and they said they had family in Weymouth, and told my mother was from Weymouth Falls, and we started talking, and we just hit it off. And then my boss, after they left, and we were going back to the station, he goes, I didn't know you were from Canada or had ties there. And I go, yeah. Apparently, he goes, wow. He goes, oh, that proved it right there. You guys were just talking like you knew each other forever. I go, yeah, we had some things in common, so.
Gene Jr. now has plans to become more than a Canuck by name. He's taken out paperwork to add Canadian citizenship to his status as an American. It's a heritage he and his wife, Angela Herrera, who is the daughter of Mexican immigrants, take pleasure in sharing with their children. Today, Gene and Angela are visiting Faye and Eugene. Gathered in the kitchen, Angela tells Faye a story about her daughter, Faye's 7-year-old grandchild, Marisa.
No, I was telling him how when Gene was talking about becoming a Canadian citizen, Marisa said, well, what does that mean, what am I then? She said, because I know, well, I'm far from Mexico and Nana's from Canada. She said, yeah. So what does that make me? And I said, that makes you a little bit of everything. And she said, that's cool. And I said, yes, that means you're very special because you get two different countries, three actually, that you all, you know, mix right. in from. I said, right. And that's really cool that right. you feel that she thinks it's special for her. She said, that mean I'm Canadian? And I'm Mexican, and I'm African-American, and I'm everything. I said, yeah, you're everything.
You have to wonder at the combination of circumstances, political, social, and personal, that put Marisa's grandfather Eugene and grandmother Faye in the same room some 50-plus years ago.
No basement.
I'm thinking it had a peak roof.
So it made didn't. A... Couldn't tell you about the roof. All I know is the inside of her.
Just going in, yeah.
Yeah, I can still picture going in. It had a back door. And a lot of them would sneak out the back door, and a lot of things happened after they got out the back door.
But. Yes, it's called Dougry.
That invasion of airmen 50 years ago is no longer a cause for friction. For one thing, those Americans are now family, sons and brothers-in-law. The young St. John black men who fought those fights are now uncles to people like Gene Samuel.
So there was all kinds of old buildings without bridges?
No, trees.
Okay.
We're on the other side of the tracks.
And thinking back to a time when the community was so vibrant that the fine young men in their fancy cars flocked here on a Saturday night, it actually brings back some pretty good memories for a couple of old St. Johners standing in front of the place where the Colored People's Association used to be.
We knew we were welcome. That was our place. No, didn't have to look to see if anyone was staring at you, if a group was going to surround you. It was just our place. And I will never, never knock. I mean, I will talk about it. I will joke about it. I will not knock it or take it out of my past, ever. It was our foundation, I'll put it that way. It was our social foundation, CPA.
I want to walk you home.
For Maritime Magazine, I'm Connell Smith. In St. John.
I want to walk you home. Will you let me walk you home? You look so good to me. Ooh-wee. I wish I was a lucky guy. I will walk you right on down the aisle. I love the way you walk. I love to hear you talk. I love the way you walk. I love to hear you talk. I'm not trying to be smart. I'm not trying to break your heart. But if I ask you for a date, will you tell me then I'm not too late? I wanna hold your hand. Will you let me hold your hand? I want to hold your hand. Please let me hold your hand. You look so good to me. Ooh, I saw you walking all alone. That's why I want to walk you home. So let me walk you home.
Charlie, let me walk you home. I want to walk you home. Let me walk you home. You look so good to me. Ooh-wee. I saw you walking all alone. And why I wanna walk you home. 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 That's why I wanna walk you.
Wait, wait, stop the show. Stop the show, honey. I'm gonna walk Dave Bartholomew home.
You know I'm gonna walk you home.